What you could do, especially when money's an issue, just say hello to somebody who's living on the street. Just start with that. Just a simple hello. You don't need to sit down and have coffee. Just hello. Thank you.
And
I want to say hi to all our friends on the St. John's Bike Trail. You know, we're out here.
I'm happy they were tuning in tonight. Community radio at its best. All right, we're going to have a song that will wrap us up. And one more thing, Right to Survive will be meeting tomorrow from 5 to 7 p.m. at Join, 1435 Northeast 81st Avenue.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Up next, Hard Knock Radio.
Check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen, and whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
JVD Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Standing in front of us, political analyst from USF. It is Dr. James Taylor back with us again. And, of course, we had to have you on, and I'm sure you've been busy talking about it, the Mueller report. This has been the most, I don't know, I don't want to use the word anticlimactic, but it seems like a lot of bets from the leadership of the Democratic Party were put on this. Like, this was going to really reveal something, and I think there's a lot going on that needs to be unpacked. First of all, are you surprised of where we're at with this right now, and can you explain to our audience what is happening at this moment?
Yeah, I'm not surprised that we are here. I'm surprised that, like you said in your lead-in, that the Mueller report was so anticlimactic. 2 years, $25 million. We've had many convictions along the way. We've had high-profile members of the Trump circle from the inauguration, from the administration, from the campaign, all being charged or pleading guilty. We've been given a bunch of ducks as a people, and we've been told all of a sudden the duck is a goose. In other words, what I mean is, if it looked like a duck, quacked like a duck, walked like a duck, we were told it's a duck. We've been lined up a bunch of ducks, and the conclusion is it's not a duck. And that's phenomenal when you consider, even with the limited scope that Robert Mueller had, he made no recommendation for either prosecuting him or declining to prosecute him. And that part right there is incomplete. Because normally a recommendation would be made.
Now, do we know this? This is what we're looking at. Leading up to this report, we saw that the former Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, you know, resigned or left or was fired, whatever word you want to use for that. This current president, Donald Trump, handpicked somebody who would do his bidding. And his reason for not liking Sessions was because he was unloyal. So he demanded loyalty above the law. So now we have somebody there who gets to read this report and nobody else gets to read it. How can we trust this guy? And that's what is befuddling me. Why would anybody take anything that is being released in any sort of seriousness, considering you know, the reputation and the modus operandi, if I can use that word, the MO of this current president.
Yeah, you don't hear anybody citing presidential privilege doctrine. You don't hear anybody citing national security doctrines. Those would normally be the things that would keep things from the public. But nobody's even citing these as potential problems that prevent its release. It's simply that it's not going to be released to the public except to the extent that the brand new, who's not been in the job for a month, William Barr, Attorney General, will then make this determination. Congress has, I can't emphasize enough, power and oversight over the president. And most Americans just don't seem to get that Congress created the first branch of government first, the presidency second, and the court is almost an afterthought in the third article of the U.S. Constitution without any specificity to it. So the Constitution gives Congress the power. It really changed with FDR and the nuclear codes. That's when the presidency becomes more of a parallel institution. We like to say separations of powers and checks and balances. No, really, the Congress is the supervisor of the president as long as he or she conducts themselves with good behavior and not engaging high crimes and misdemeanors. They're allowed to do their job. But we must remember the executive branch is to execute what the legislative branch has determined. And what we've done up is in the modern era of the presidency is turned it upside down. So I say that to say the presidency being investigated by Mueller is the president investigating the president. And most Americans won't get that. Which what I mean is it's the executive branch under the Department of Justice that's investigating the executive. The legislative branch has a whole different set of tools with which to investigate that are much broader than Robert Mueller. In other words, we had a cop writing tickets or checking for jaywalking, and then there are other cops that have the power of investigating whether you committed a very serious, heinous crime. What I mean is Mueller's job was limited. The Democrats' power is far-reaching, and the investigative tools they have available to them go way further than Mueller's limited focus on Russia 2016.
So let me ask you this. Two things. One, do we and should we expect Congress to play this out? And two, would it be politically expedient to do that? Because it seems like what's happening now, there's a political narrative that was allowed to be put forth by Congress or the Democrats in Congress. And that political narrative was that the Russians interfered. Right. That's what. And so the public has been, did the Russians interfere?
Yeah.
So now the Russians, according to the summary, because now what was not explained was that this guy can make a summary. There's been no counter narrative put forth. In other words, the minute that he held off or gave a summary, the Democrats should have said that's fake news and discounted it. But instead, they gave it a lot of seriousness. All these news shows like on MSNBC and others, they gave it full specials and the whole nine. So it seemed like you are allowing the narrative of this to be the smoking gun to carry the weight of the day. And this president is riding this to the goalpost.
Yeah. Well, I think the smoking gun is the Robert Mueller report itself. I think we're just not even 48 hours away from its release. So we all have to take a step back and realize there's going to be a whole bunch of shoes that drop behind this because, again, Adam Schiff, Elijah Cummings, Maxine Waters, other members of other investigative committees are going to do their own investigations on the stuff that Mueller wouldn't touch. In other words, Mueller said the president probably committed a crime, but not enough for us to go any further with in my jurisdiction. But that means that Congress has to pick up where Mueller left off and follow through in terms of the obstruction of justice.
Now we follow that, but will they do that, or will that be a political liability? Will it come across, or could it be portrayed as y'all are just wasting time? Y'all lost this ball game. Now you're trying to start a new one. Let it go.
Yeah. Congress has oversight responsibility. It would be derelict of them not to do what they are supposed to do, which is to have oversight. And if they're there afraid to investigate these obvious issues that have been raised, then they all ought to be voted out, because no matter how popular or unpopular it is, as representatives of the people, they're supposed to do the people's business. And so that's their fiduciary responsibility. They don't have a choice not to investigate Donald Trump if they see hints of crimes, misdemeanors, etc. So there's that. the strategic wisdom of it, I think we have to look to Nancy Pelosi's leadership that up to this point has been stellar and has not made a mistake yet. She's not made a strategic error that has hurt the Democrats. And I think we have to watch what she's doing. She kind of threw a hint last week and said impeachment's not an issue unless the Republicans do it. Then she
let's start with that, because I think, again, we're talking about narratives that are out in the public and then strategy that, you know, what might be considered sound strategy. It's always been, to my understanding, one, that you, if you do the impeachment this late in the process and you're successful, let's say the worst case scenario happens or the best case scenario, depending on what side of the aisle you are on, he gets impeached and then you give Pence the opportunity. Yeah. He comes in with a clean slate and a perception that may carry out publicly. Well, let's give him a chance. Yeah. He's new blood. And he'll look like a breath of fresh air, even though his policies and politics may even be further to the right than Trump's. So it seemed like it would be a wise move with, you know, with the elections coming up to step back and do that at all.
That's it.
But a lot of people have been riding that ship. So with that being said, and I bring all this up, what is the political strategy, in your opinion, that needs to be taken that the public can relate to? Not the tactical stuff that you're talking about, which isn't sexy and always easy to understand, but what's the narrative that they should be putting forth?
It's going to be impossible, but I think the Democrats should get out of the way and let Donald Trump affect himself. I think as long now that the Mueller, this is how I see this right now. My first reaction is now that the air is clear from the Mueller report to the extent that it is, now the American people get to look just at Donald Trump and see the Mueller case or investigation has kind of been an albatross over everybody's ability to see Trump for himself, because the question was, is he going to survive this? Where is it leading to next? Is it going to his children? What's the connection to Roger Stone? Why is he acting this way towards Vladimir Putin? So we kept thinking something else big is coming, ignoring the fact that everything that happened up to this point was already big. Right. We were looking for a big conclusion that had happened, ended at the White House. That did not happen. What I'm saying, Davey D, is this. I think we and the Democrats have to get out of the way. The media has to get out of the way, although they can't. What I'm trying to suggest is let the American people see Donald Trump now for the naked like he is. In other words, as long as the Democrats get in the way, the American people are not going to look at how despicable and ungodly Donald Trump has been as president of the United States. We keep looking at the legal measurements of his behavior. I'm saying now that the law is not a threat to him per se, except in New York, and at some point we got to be able to take a step back and give the people who are the public, who are the voters, an opportunity to step up. And if they don't, shame on them. In other words, that's what Nancy Pelosi said. Let this be resolved by elections. If the Democrats this morning are not on fire with determination to make sure this man is not reelected, then they deserve the second Trump administration. Because to me, if they've lost this battle, it should really mobilize the Democratic base today more than any time since 2016.
That was going to be my next question. We're talking with Dr. James Taylor, political analyst, author from USF. I was seeing a lot of people, and some very intelligent people, who were saying, oh, this is doom and gloom. You know, the Mueller report didn't show anything. This means that, you know, that the president was handed the election. But it said to me, like, with all the things that this president has done, separation of children at the border, the racism that he boldly presents, and the people who follow him, how they've been executing that. I mean, we just had three black women beaten over at Bayfair Mall, you know, over the weekend, called all kind of racial slurs, and San Leandro police wanted to arrest them. These were young girls. So this is going on right here in the Bay. We don't have to look to Texas, Oklahoma, all these foreign states, right here, Bay Area, this weekend, for people who were thinking like, oh, this doesn't affect us, right here, you know, right there in Bayfair, you know, this happened. So with that being said, you know, you have his disdain towards women, all the things that are being, all the laws and legislation that he's putting forth, the tax cuts, all these different things. It seems to me that should be enough to motivate people not to have him reelected. Yeah. But it seems like this narrative is carrying like, oh, this is going to. So I'm just trying to see the path to that.
Yeah, well, I think the media deserves a lot of criticism for amping and hyping up this to the point that it was expected to have a certain conclusion. They drove the narrative that there must be something to Trump's behavior with Putin, and they wouldn't get off it the whole time, right? But at some point, what I'm trying to say, DVD, is we have to at least try to have some faith in the people, the demos, as a whole. There's a political intelligence in American voters. The voters voted against Trump, for anybody that's saying, yeah, well, then why is he president? 100 million people stayed home. 60 plus million voted against the man and did the best they could. And because of an 18th century obsolete pro-slavery voting mechanism called the Electoral College, it didn't work out that way in the 21st century, 400 years later, right? So a 400-year-old apparatus is what made Trump possible, not the lack of voting commitment. So what I'm suggesting to you is that I think what Nancy Pelosi has decided and made the determination is that this has to be resolved politically, not legally. And what you, all of the despicable behavior of the president that you cite, there's a long, long list of bullet points of just ungodly, despicable behavior from this man. I mean, he's worse than Andrew Jackson, worse than Andrew Johnson. He's more, you know, embarrassing than LBJ lifting up his shirt, showing his kidney operation. He is worse than LBJ's statements that we've now heard on tape 50 years later. Donald Trump, without the Mueller report, I'm saying to you, now is on stage by himself, and the American people will have to decide if this is what they want to put up with. In other words, we can look for the law to solve this. We can look for the Democrats to solve this. But at some point, David D., this got to come back to the voters and their choices. And apparently, some people like this nonsense because Trump's numbers have been going up and down and up and down. But the fact that they're going up at all, to me, says something that is deeply morally lost.
Let me ask you this. We're talking with Dr. James Taylor, if you're just tuning in. Let's look at this Electoral College and the strategy. It is a state-by-state competition, whether you like it or not. It's not a... it's not the majority. Yes. I mean, and I often tell people, if you want to know why Trump won or lost or, you know,
both,
you know, why 3 more million people voted for Hillary versus Trump.
Yeah.
Trump lost by 4.5 million in California alone.
Yeah.
So that gives you the numbers. You know, he lost by 2 million in New York.
Yeah.
Right. So we understand it's state by state.
Yeah.
And the question that I ask, if there's this pronouncement that this Mueller report is going to send him back in the White House, that says to me that the people in Michigan are going to look at this lack of a smoking gun and say, you know what, let's go for this man. They're going to say that in Wisconsin. They're going to say that in Pennsylvania. They're going to say that in North Carolina, Florida. Those are the and Ohio. Those
right.
are the six states.
Right.
That are really going to determine this. So is it state by state as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, and that's what people don't understand is the Electoral College is democracy for the states. Not for the people, but for the states as a unit. As a political unit, you have the demos, you have the states, which represent federalism, and then you have the federal government. Amendment number 10 says powers that are not specifically given to the federal government and prevented from the states shall be delegated to the people. So in the 10th Amendment, it mentions three different sovereignties, the federal government, the states, and the demos, the people. And so that's where you sort of see the voice of the people get some play in this whole interaction.
The question for you this afternoon is what is the path for the election if it's state by state?
Yeah, if I understand the question right, again, like I said earlier, the Electoral College effectively is democracy for the state, so that every state in the union gets an opportunity to have its issues addressed by politicians during the campaign cycles. And so Iowa and New Hampshire become very important. Now, California moving its primary up change the whole equation, because there's such a large amount that could really shift and create a forerunner candidate early in the race. Whereas if you won Iowa or New Hampshire, representing these small farmland dairy states, you were showing momentum. But now with California moving its primary up, California might throw the whole thing off. So we don't know how that works out, and that might play into Kamala Harris's hands. But in terms of the electoral college and the voting distribution, the way it's playing out is Pennsylvania, I believe it is, just recently joined 11 other states and the state of D.C. and Washington, D.C. to effectively sign on to a mandatory compact where they will agree to ignore or to distribute the Electoral College votes based on the popular vote. Now, it's not where it needs to be in terms of actually coming to fruition yet.
What does that mean?
It basically means you don't have to get rid of the Electoral College. You just use your own state electoral mechanism to nullify it, so that, again, legally Oklahoma and New Hampshire have never behaved like the rest of the states when it comes to the winner-take-all system. We have a winner-take-all. Whoever gets the 270 out of the 538 first wins. But if you have a system like you have in New Hampshire and in Oklahoma, then they can decide based on who won most votes, that person gets a larger part of the Electoral College vote, but not the entire thing. Right. Whereas the winner take all, you could win by two votes and end up with all of the electoral votes.
So, but that can work the other way in a close election. Mm-hmm. So we're giving that out by proportion. Mm-hmm. So let's say it's a very close election in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Then and we have another state that plays winner take all. Mm-hmm. That could play two. Mm-hmm. You know, the favor of Trump if he does well in a battleground state. Right. I mean, it can also go the other way.
That's the thing. That's the dynamic. It's like it could actually work the other way, where California could end up in 2020 having, because it signed on to this compact, California would have to give its votes to Trump if he happened to win the popular vote in California, which would never happen, but it technically could do that. And it's just sort of like Trump with this emergency border declaration, where you got to be careful.
Let me just make sure I understood it. So the popular vote in the state means that you get
the whole thing.
You get the whole thing, right? Now, this is the pact that they signed, or is it proportional?
Well, the pact that they signed would be that whoever wins popular vote gets the Electoral College vote. So it's not even proportional. Proportional is what you have in Oklahoma and New Hampshire, where Obama may have won. Obama gets one, and let's say John McCain gets one. Or Obama gets two in Oklahoma, and let's say Mitt Romney gets one. That's how that breaks down. But in terms of the proportional aspect of it, that's how that breaks down. But in terms of, finding ways to grant all of the votes to the state based on the popular vote, that's what the mechanism is. And so the idea is to render the Electoral College obsolete simply by coming up with innovative mechanisms that effectively nullify it. But like you said, it can be used, it can go both ways. And Democrats can't imagine the unintended consequences where it might blow back, because they would be the ones in favor of any kind of electoral reform. The Republicans, like Mitch McConnell, are always against it because they are the minority party. The white minority in America, the white electoral minority is increasing in terms of voting. And so with that in play, the Republicans are the minority party in American politics. In fact, in California, there's Democrats number one, decline the state is number two, and then Republicans are number three. And if you think about the last three presidential cycles, three of the five, or two of the five, depending upon how you see 2004, the Republicans haven't won a presidency without the Electoral College in 2000 and in 2016. So they need this mechanism to stay in place in order to facilitate their viability as a national party. Without the Electoral College, the Republicans become more weakened, and that's why they have no incentive in electoral reform. That's why they support voter suppression and voter ID laws, and they want brown people not to vote.
Lastly, let me ask you this. We were talking about interfering with elections. One of the things that we've seen before is the elevating of dissident voices within various communities. So there are folks that may walk around and say, I don't believe in voting. And that's fine. That's a valid opinion and political position. But if that can be something that can be used as a divisive thing, all of a sudden that may get elevation. Let's fund that position. Let's highlight it. Let's put it on TV. Let's have it show up and give it a certain amount of
credibility
mm-hmm. and have that become a clarion call in this election. How do we understand when that is happening versus when it is just an organic, heartfelt type of, you know, position that people are rallying behind versus something that is handpicked and raised up?
You mean the issues of the day?
Or just when dissident voices within the community are then highlighted. Some people may say it's a fringe position.
Yeah.
Some may say it's a real valid one.
Yeah.
But if I'm on the opposite and I go, wow, it looks like the evangelicals aren't happy, I might say, let's give these evangelicals a platform
right.
and let them go and divide right. and conquer
right.
within a political political environment.
Right.
But that is going to happen here. And oftentimes, black people are used that way,
yeah.
right? Let's
yeah.
find, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
a position that,
yeah.
you know, where people are like, do not vote at all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if they don't say reparations, don't go
yeah.
to the polls, right?
Yeah.
You may have
yeah.
that. And it
yeah,
may be a legitimate position, but it's not one that would be elevated.
Yeah. yeah.
Except by
yeah.
the opposition who
yeah.
says, well, heck, let's give it a
right.
free thing and
right.
let's use that as a way
right.
to depress the vote.
Right.
So how do you know that's happening
yeah.
versus not happening?
Yeah, I like to look at the context of the movements out of which people claim to be representing. If they have no attachment to grassroots organizing, then I question it. That, like this whole Addos movement, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this,
yeah.
the American the Descendants of Slaves, whether you take a position on that or not, like Black Lives Matter, these are hashtag inventions. These are not from the grassroots of everyday people. And so to try to start movements by computer, for me, is a top-down intellectual elite kind of thing and is not grounded in the people. So if I see someone like Killer Mike talking about Bernie, or see someone like Nina, the sister that was working for Bernie, you know, talking for Bernie, I'm like, okay, it's interesting. But if they, you know, they may have come from Ohio grassroots activism, like sister did, Nina did. But then I see you on Fox and you, this guy, Jesse Peterson, and I'm trying to figure out now who does he represent? Like, in other words, Fox and the liberals and the conservatives for over 60 years have been trying to find black leaders and black voices that they find appealing. This goes back to Ronald Reagan. Let's go back to LBJ trying to replace Martin Luther King with Samuel Riley Pierce, who was a Republican in the Reagan era 20 years, 30 years later, in the 60s. They've been trying to replace and find the preferred black voices. And now with the proliferation of voices with the internet and social media, there is no black center anymore. There's not a black core church, civil rights, hood foundation of the black community anymore. And so social media in some ways is trying to reiterate black community in ways that demographically it doesn't fully exist like it
but
used
that,
to.
But that could be a good thing. Why should the voices be limited to a handful? I mean, there is a thing about grassroots, and I think people would argue that the movements that they represent, whether I agree with them or not, or you
right.
agree with them or not, have a grassroots
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I'm more looking at who elevates and why.
Yeah.
How did it become front page? As you said, if Fox is all of a sudden highlighting
yeah.
your issue, how is that
yeah.
when they haven't
yeah.
highlighted anything
yeah.
more so than, you know, whether
yeah.
or not? Because the internet right now, whether people like it or not, is a valid place where people
right.
organize.
Absolutely.
It's a place where folks are going to come together, and it makes sense. If there's a million people, if I know Bun B, shout out to him, who's
right.
coming to town,
right.
has 2 million followers,
right.
and he's a political-minded individual,
right.
which he is, then if you're trying to do something in Texas, you better talk to that man, because he got 2 million people listening to
yeah.
him,
right?
right? Whether I like it or not. And, you know, we can question, how did he get his grassroots? Was he organizing,
right.
or does he have fans
right.
that
right.
like his music,
right.
or is it a combination of both? But
right.
he got 2 million people
right.
that listen. So
right.
I guess what I'm getting at is, understanding all these different dynamics, you know, do we have to have a strategy to see what is being elevated, how it's being elevated, and more importantly, once it's elevated, do people latch on? So with the ADOS, you know, ADOS movement, there is some traction in
yeah.
some places, and that may be a factor.
Yeah.
The question is, how do you strategize to deal with that, or do you have to legitimize it?
Yeah, well, in the social science, social movement literature, there's this whole notion of the mobilization of bias, right? It's talking about who has the power to get the rest of us to agree and disagree on any issue, just raise the issue, that person has the power. So this is, I think, an important point you raise is to how these different opinions and voices arise. I think social media, again, has had a great impact in this area. The real challenge, I think, and this might come from the standpoint of just being consumers of this example you gave of somebody having 2 million followers, is how do those 2 million followers hold that person accountable? See, because that's always been the struggle in the Black community, even with Martin Luther King and the things he supported, is how do we get accountability to Jesse and Al representing all of us when it's impossible to do? So that's the real challenge, and I think that's where local accountability comes back into play, is locals have a better sense than people on the national stage what the core issues are that resonate with them that they want to be articulated. And if they're up talking about issues like, you know, I don't know, that are you know, not primary or central to the African-American community or the progressive community in general, then that, I think, needs to be checked. In other words, we need mechanisms of accountability. And it may be that, like a case like Chrisette Michelle, this might not be a good example, but Chrisette Michelle decided early, you know, you an up-and-coming artist, unfortunately for her career, she made the mistake of thought she could just ride this Trump bandwagon and give Black people the you-know-what finger and just kind of ride with this Trump thing without any sort of accountability. Now, if you Kanye and Jim Brown, you've been around 20, 30 years, you might be able to get away with this. If you Chrisette Michelle and you only been around a short period of time, then people might just spit you back out. And that's the accountability. So in her case, unfortunately, the writ large Black community did not like what it heard. It didn't like what it heard from Kanye either, but it doesn't have the same kind of discipline.
Well, the difference is, you know, with Chrisette Michelle, for people who don't know, she decided to be one of the Black performers who showed up at the inauguration and, you know, made the case that she's going to bridge the gap and to hell with folks, and her career is pretty much over.
Yeah.
Kanye has crossover audience, right, and he has a lot of people outside the community, right, who will ride for him, and he also has industry infrastructure. Yeah. So whether you like him or not, you know, he hasn't been canceled by the industry, so they're still playing his music, whether I like him or not. Mm-hmm. They're still putting him on TV, whether I like mm-hmm. him or not. So there's that added thing, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, that's a factor to put mm-hmm. in. But I think the point, but the accountability mm-hmm. factor is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I think. It's sort of like people say there's no Black community, or they try to trouble the whole question, the notion, the location, the core values of the so-called Black community. And it's kind of like what Justice Powell said with in the Giacobelli versus Ohio State 1964 case when he was talking about obscenity. He says, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. And I'm saying that about Black community, that you may trouble it all you want intellectually, but we know it when we see it. And when you see people discipline someone like Chrisette Michelle, that's the community. Now, how do you get that kind of apparatus to be activated with Kamala? I think it is. Activated with Cory Booker? I think it is. Black Twitter in particular has been very resourceful in continuing to keep certain issues and question. And the beauty of Black Twitter, because of its proliferation, it questions everything. And then we get to listen to the arguments, read through the comments, and decide for ourselves what we think. And so in that way, you know, in some ways, raise these people being elevated by invisible hands.
Right.
Still got to be accountable to typing hands on keyboards. And that's the beauty of right now.
We've been talking with Dr. James Taylor. We're going to get ready to close out. Last comments on his Mueller report. Where do you see it going?
I see the Mueller report actually exploding down the line. I think people assume that the worst is out and we've heard it. And now the narrative is no crime. Let's move on. That's not going to happen. I think there's just too much still unresolved, too many questions unresolved, too much that the Democrats don't know, too much that Robert Mueller didn't answer. How does he, for example, reconcile that Donald Trump, on the day that the Russians went after Hillary Clinton's emails, stands up on the world stage and says, Russia, if you hear me? Now, Robert Mueller has to answer that. Are we all crazy? Are we all crazy that this man had people arrested? Everybody had all these people around him arrested from every aspect of his life except his family, his inauguration, his administration, his campaign. This man, if you take away impeachment, if you take away the Robert Mueller report, Donald Trump's administration is still technically, with only 2 years under its belt, more corrupt with more convictions than the Nixon administration by 11 or more convictions. He has more indictments. Donald Trump's presidency and administration is more corrupt than the Ulysses S. Grant administration or the Warren G. Harding administration. So independent of the criminality as it relates to Mueller, apart from that, just talking about presidential corruption, this is the most corrupt presidency of all time. And for that reason, moving Mueller out of the way, I think, will now clear the air and let the people see that for themselves. At some point, we have to trust the wisdom of the people. And I just keep relying on that, that at some point, the intelligence, the collective intelligence of Americans does kick in, no matter what else is being shot and pitched to them. And I do see a reckoning coming with Donald Trump. He may think he got away with this. He's celebrating and dancing and slamming the football in the end zone, and all his people are smiling. This is the day after this report has come out. Davey, we know things don't go as they are planned. This is not going to go the way Trump wants it to go. There's too many questions that are still not answered. Barr is going to come before the different committees. Mueller's going to come before the different committees. John Don Jr. is going to be brought before these different committees. And I don't think the Democrats can overplay their hand. I think this is so serious that it would be worth them losing in 2020 to get to the bottom of who this man has been as a corrupt politician. Donald Trump is corrupt even if he wasn't convicted.
There you have it. Dr. James Taylor, check him out. USF, political analyst. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Let us ha. Hey, hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Round Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side.
What's free? Free is when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Tell my n***a I need you. Do all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Tell my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, what's
just
free?
Just a lad, I was cunning, just got a pad out in London. I keep stacking my money, I need a ladder by summer. 8K shots, ducking straight shots. Been a top dog, that's before the K dots. Cracking in 06, immaculate showmanship. Talking like you Mitch, disastrous on the strip. Holding on your bitch, could've never sold you a brick. With them people, you never been on the list. Mona Lisa to me ain't nothing but a. Hanging pictures like swinging from his. We so different, you thought these didn't exist. The Megalodon, never seen on his wrist. I'm from the South where they never make it this rich. God is the greatest, but Satan been on this shit. Walking the pavement, I pray I'm illuminated. Over a decade and never nobody's favorite. Part and kilo go hand in hand like we gambling huff. My amigo, 1 million grams when we count them enough. You was dead broke, I let you hold it back. You paid for it, but fight around and stole the track. Screaming gang, gang, now you wanna rap. Racketeering charges, caught him on the tap. Looking for a bond, lawyers want to tax. Purple hair got them
So you
bet. What's free? Free is when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, yeah. What's free? Fed investigations, heard they plotting like I trapped. 20 mil in cash, they know I got that up for rap. Maybe it's the Michael Rubens or the Robert Krafts. Or the billionaire from Marcy and the way they got my back. See how I prevailed and then they try to knock me back. Lock me in a cell for all them nights and I won't snap. 250 a show and they still think I'm selling crack. When you bring my name up to the judge, you tell them facts. Tell them how we funding all these kids to go to college. Tell them how we ceasing all these wars, stopping violence. Trying to fix the system in the way that they designed it. Oh, say you can see, I don't feel like I'm free. Locked down in my cell, shackled from ankle to feet. Judge banging that gavel, turned me to slave from a king. Another day in the bin, I gotta hang from a string. Just for popping a willy, my people went to the city. From a cell to a chopper, view from the top of the city. You can tell how we rockin' soon as I pop up. We litty poppin' like Bad Boy in 94. Big poppin' and Diddy and counting me out. Like my account ain't busy, that's 5,000,020. Sit up and count till I'm dizzy. Fade of 500,000, 100 round and it's dizzy. As we be feeling rapping, I might just pop up with Drizzy. Like, what's free? It's when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Tell my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Tell my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life was free.
In the land of the free where the blacks enslave. 3/5 of a man, I believe's the phrase. I'm 50% of Duce and it's dead free, yeah. 100% of Ace of Spades, worth half a beat. Ooh. Rock Nation, half of that, that's my piece. 100% of title to bust it up with my cheese. Smokes my won't ever work together. You run a checker, but they never give you leverage. No red hat, though Michael and Prince mean, yay. They separate you when you got Michael and Prince's DNA. I ain't one of these house you bought. My house like a resort. My house bigger than yours, my spot. Come on, man. My route better, of course. We started without food in our mouth. They gave us pork and pig intestines. You discarded that we ingested. We made the project a wave. You came back, reinvested and gentrified it. Took sense of pride, now how that's free. And them people stole the soul and hit with 360s. I ain't got a billion streams, got $1 billion. Inflating numbers like we both be happy about this. We was praising Billboard, but we were young. Now I look at Billboard like, is you dumb? To this day, Grandma afraid what I might say. They gonna have to kill me, Grandmama, I'm not their slave. Check out the bazaar, rapping style used by me. The H.O.V., look at my hair free, carefree. Ain't near free, enjoy your chains. What's your employer name with the hairpiece? I survived the hood, can't no shaitan rob me. My account's so good, I'm practically living tax-free. Factory, that's me. Sold drugs, got away, scot-free. That's a C-C-E, copy, guilt-free. Steal me, and expect me to not feel away. To this day, you would say, y'all kill me. Sucker-free, no shucking me. I don't jive turkey, say happy Thanksgiving. Sound like a murder to me. Smoke-free, all of y'all calling out toll-free. Label rob you for millions, yet you wanna put a hole in me. Sugar-free, season, but I'm salt-free. You lay a hand on hold my shooter, shoot for free. I promise World War III. Send an order through a hand speed. Kill you in 24 hours, the shorter you can't ignore the hand speed. On guard, it's off the head, it's improv, but it's no comedy. Sign I fail, hell nah.
Wars Against Assange. The intrepid journalist and author Glenn Greenwald, in his 2014 work, No Place to Hide, offers a damning portrait of the U.S. media, too long trained to worship at the altars of power as agents of first attack against those journalists who dare to question or expose imperial edicts or escapades. Indeed, Greenwald himself details how establishment reporters begin their attacks by questioning both his status as a journalist and then one's psychological wellness. Now, today, we see the same tactics deployed against Julian Assange of WikiLeaks fame. Assange and his collective, WikiLeaks, have been whistleblowers and transparency activists determined to bring light on government activities everywhere. Ecuador's decision to withdraw its welcome to Assange has exposed him to the venom of the American government, largely for showing U.S. atrocities back in Iraq during the war. In 2008, Greenwald writes, U.S. Army secret reports called WikiLeaks, quote, an enemy of the state, unquote, showing plans to destroy the group. And although Assange didn't work as a reporter, he compiled great amounts of data and shared it with great newspapers, which, while publishing his data, still tried to demonize him, denounce him, and question his sanity. Assange's work has shown how governments, including the U.S., really work. For that, he has earned high praise. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Adamant, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. Check out. Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they ready from the steel gray beef. Say please. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to the lovers I neighbor with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it,
girl. East Coast. Dance out.
Writing is really a passion of mine. I kind of have this system in the way that I write that I'm really picky about because I don't like people messing with it. I guess I'm pretty stubborn. When it comes to activities at my school, I'm not too open or outgoing about them. I haven't done a whole lot of things. I wrestled my sophomore year. If I'm not at school or at home, I'm working. I don't really have too much of a choice. I kind of provide for myself as an adult. I haven't exactly had the best life. I was born to a mom who had me too young. She was 16. Barely even about to turn 17. My father was 19 years old, and they were just young, stupid kids. Both of my parents were addicts while I was growing up, and my mother now even still. Eventually, that kind of lifestyle took my father's life when I was 15, and things have never been the same. Growing up, I always felt like something was off. But I never would have imagined that it had to do with my name, which was something somebody else had given to me. I think I was probably about 11 or 12 when I actually decided to go by the nickname Cat more permanently. I went by the nickname Cat that two of my other friends had given me. You know, we decided we wanted to be nicknamed after candy bars and everything. We wanted to be cool. So one of them, they were actually twins, and one of them was Snickers, the other was Hershey's, and ironically, I was the limited edition Halloween white chocolate Kit Kat, because, of course, you gotta name the white person after a white candy. To me, it felt like an injury if somebody called me by my birth name, and going by Kat was kind of this band-aid that hid the pain for a while, that placebo effect. Going by a different name was more like about running towards my true self and discovering that person buried underneath all the rubble and the sadness of my life, rather than running away from some terrible past. When I got older, 17 or so, was when I decided to go by Alex. I had this great realization that I was searching for the real me the entire time. During the biggest hardships I've had to deal with in my life, finding myself as Alex was like opening the floodgates. I went from being the timid, shy, and slightly opinionated girl to full-fledged badass who had opinions and wanted to actually be something. When it comes to my plans after high school, my plans are to go into the Marines, go to college, legally change my name to Alex, and that's who I'm going to be for the rest of my life. This is a secret to you guys, I'll tell you guys specially, but my ultimate goal is really to destroy the dark web and be the best hacker on the planet, you know, with a bunch of best-selling books and famous poems. But that's a long way away. In the end, it's you who makes the important decisions about yourself. The flower that endures the hardest winters is a product of its environment. It shows just how strong and hardy you truly are. This is Alex Folker, signing off. Com muito amor e paixão.
Let us ha. Hey, hey, hey. Ho, 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 knock radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Hot, brown buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping hard knock radio. Brown buffalo, all up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side.
We'll be right back.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 9th Annual Keaton Otis Memorial on Sunday, May 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Maranatha Church in Portland. Keaton Otis was killed by Portland police May 12, 2010. Every month since his murder, a vigil has been held at the spot he died. The event will include artists, community members, and leaders, refreshments, and information about the monthly vigils held at Northeast 6th and Halsey, where Keaton was killed. Again, that's the 9th Annual Keaton Otis Memorial on Sunday, May 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Maranatha Church, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I get home from school. My dad said, we're all going to the drive-in. Double features on Monkey's Uncle and the Monsters Got Home. You wanna go? I said, not that. I can think it's about summer. It's almost here. That means I get to spend some time with my lover. Yeah, he's a real dude. With his long hair, bangs, and beer boots. I'm going to the Battle of the Garages tonight. His fans play. As I'm getting ready, I'll to think about tonight. I can just feel the vibrations, I can see the psychedelic colors, and I can hear the music.